This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Joanna Nelson DeFlores, Green Cities Director for Forterra, and Michael Yadrick, Plant Ecologist for Seattle Parks and Recreation. Both Joanna and Michael are members of the nonprofit Green Seattle Partnership. Joanna and Michael are here to tell us about the work of the Green Seattle Partnership to restore and actively maintain the city's forested parklands. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Why was the Green Seattle Partnership formed? What is your history?
The Green Seattle Partnership, first off, is a community-based stewardship program dedicated to restoring all of Seattle's forested parks. So that's 2,500 acres of forested areas right here in the city. And the partnership was launched in 2005, and it was really an answer to decades and decades of work that volunteers around the city, community groups, organizations had been working on trying to control invasive plants in their parks. But there wasn't really a coordinated effort at that time. There weren't a lot of resources. People were reinventing the wheel, trying to figure out how to go about this and develop their own practices. And so right around 2000, there was actually a really amazing study that was done by an organization at the time called Seattle Urban Nature Project. And they did a full assessment of the health of all the forested parks in Seattle. And that really shed a light on what was happening in our parks and really showed that there was a huge threat and that we were at risk of losing all of the trees in our forested parks and natural areas due to invasive plants and just old age of many of the trees. So parks departments started to realize these natural areas aren't going to take care of themselves. And right around that time, Forterra was beginning to recognize that if we're, as a conservation organization, going to conserve lands out in rural areas and places to recreate, that we also need to start looking at our cities, which is where in the United States, 80% of the population lives in the city. And so parks are a really important element to our quality of life here. So stars kind of aligned. Forterra really began to look at the value of our forested parks in our cities. The city recognized we need to elevate this and start a coordinated effort. So that was really the beginnings right at 2005, and we're now about 12 years into the program. We've taken this model, the Green Seattle Partnership, and now replicated it with eight other cities in the region. So our goal and vision is that we'll have a connected, contiguous, healthy urban forest throughout the Puget Sound. And so we're looking to grow this program. It's now in three counties and really bring these cities together.
Who is involved in the Green Seattle Partnership?
So the Green Seattle Partnership is a true partnership, and I think that's what really makes it unique. A lot of people ask us, well, where is it? Where do I go? How do I mail something to the partnership? And in itself, it's a coalition of a lot of different entities. And so it started out in 2005 as a partnership between Forterra, City of Seattle, and the active community groups that were working in their parks at the time, and has since grown to be a very successful, nationally recognized program that includes a long list of probably 20 to 30 other nonprofits. So it ranges from, in addition to Forterra, EarthCore, Mount Sisson Greenway, Tilth Alliance, and a long list of many more. So we're really excited that all these different organizations have come together and really identify with that common goal and vision. It's the only way we could get this done is really bring everyone together. Also of noting that the community members are really a huge partner in all of this. So there's over 70,000 volunteer hours last year alone. And so the city of Seattle, the residents are super invested, and it's just not something you see in other parts of the country.
What is the value of forested parkland?
So there's a long list, really amazing list of all the different types of values that an urban forest can provide all of us. And so there's a long list of benefits that many of us are aware of. Clean air, help filtering and capturing stormwater, even reduce noise and help with natural cooling. Right now, this time of year, summer, is when we begin to appreciate the cooling effects. And we have a couple fun facts. The net cooling effect of just one young tree is equivalent, if you can believe it, to 10 of those room size air conditioners running for 20 hours. And so we save a lot of energy by having trees, whether it's in our parks, a great place to go when it's hot out, or even just planting a tree in your backyard. They also sequester carbon. So, you know, an acre of forest captures about 6 metric tons of carbon and also then produces about 4 tons of oxygen. In Seattle, if you think of all of our trees, not just in our parks, but all the trees across Seattle, the whole urban forest, it's estimated that it sequesters about 140,000 metric tons in a year. So it's a lot of monetary value. In addition, a lot of great health benefits. There's some neat, interesting studies that show people recover faster and quicker from a hospital when they have a view of sort of a forest grove. And they've even shown to lower crime rates in neighborhoods. So there's a long list of what we call ecosystem services and green infrastructure. I also just wanted to point out that in an urban environment, it's also many people's first and maybe only opportunity to experience nature. And so these places are really, really essential to connecting people to nature and having that experience. And then lastly, but also important, is the habitat value. So there's a lot of resident and migrating wildlife populations that really count on having these forested areas to thrive.
You alluded a bit to this earlier, but how much forested parkland do we have in Seattle and where is it located?
So our ultimate goal is to restore 2,500 acres of forested parkland, and it's really spread out throughout the city. It's amazing. It's in every corner, and I generally name the parks in every corner. So there's Ceola Park in the deep southwest on the border with Burien. Deep southeast is Lake Ridge Park, so Dead Horse Canyon. Deep northeast is like Burke Gilman Trail, Matthews Beach up there, and then deep northwest is like Landover Woods. So it's really spread out. We're active in about over 100 parks at this moment in time. However, there are some areas where forested parkland is notoriously missing. Places like downtown, the greater Duwamish.
How do the forest remnants we see today compare to the original forests in the area?
We don't know exactly what the forest looked like in the past, but really the point of ecological restoration is to renew or restore ecosystems that have been degraded, damaged, or destroyed. So we've learned a lot. There's some graduate work out there, folks have researched. There's obviously past aerial images we know about. A lot of what we know, too, is just from oral traditions. So we know that human beings have been in the Puget Sound since the Ice Age, really. So talking with the Duwamish tribe and elders, we know about how the forests have been used by people. So what we do to restore, then, kind of given the ambiguity about what it looked like in the past, is that we set references. So we have target ecosystems. They're like our ultimate goal we shoot for. And a lot of the forests that we know were here, generally this area was covered in conifers and mixed deciduous forests. But we also know on the bluffs we have great madrone-dominant forests as well. And then two, like large parts of the southeastern part of Seattle were probably covered in gary oak. So we're like prairies. And really how those forests were maintained was people burning them to maintain them for foraging and hunting and whatnot. So really, we do have a big diversity of forests, although majority of what we're shooting for is, especially in the green belts where we have opportunities and then lots of space, like shooting for growing bigger evergreen conifers that are long-lived.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Joanna Nelson DeFlores and Michael Yadrick of the Green Seattle Partnership, a nonprofit working to restore and actively maintain the city's forested parklands. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. Would you say more about the condition of Seattle's forested parklands?
Earlier, Joanna alluded to this kind of baseline documentation we have from 1999-2000. So there was an effort by this group called the Seattle Urban Nature Project. But really, they surveyed all of Seattle's public lands. So not just the forested parkland, but public school property, unimproved right-of-ways. So we do know quite a bit about what it looked like 17 years ago. So since then, we've been working on, probably by year's end, we will have touched 1,500 acres of our 2,500-acre goal. So we know that we've made some improvements on those 1,500 acres, but largely those 1,000 acres that we have yet to touch are probably the same as they were in 99, 2000, if not worse. What we find largely, especially in the green belts, is those longer-lived conifer deciduous forests that traditionally were here, the origin forests, a lot of those are gone. We do have a few spots where they have survived, and really there are some old-growth forests in the city limits, and they're the coolest places to go if you want to go and contemplate nature or you want to go and become a steward. So like a Steward Park or a Schmitz Park, they're really examples of, they have the characteristics of the traditional kind of old-growth forest ecosystem that we had here once. So there's big standing conifers, there's standing dead trees, there's wood on the ground, there's diversity in the understory, diversity in trees. But those are just a few examples of some of the healthier, more sustainable forests. But in some cases, still a lot of the green belts are covered in some of those native hardwoods, like the bigleaf maple and red alder, are reaching sort of the end of their lifespans. So really, there's death and decay is really part of the forest ecosystem as well. And we're helping to transition them into more of a balanced mix of, yeah, conifers and deciduous forests.
How do you judge the health of a forested area?
As we've mentioned now, there was this really amazing study that was done in Seattle back in 2000. And when Forterra went ahead to try and replicate the Green Seattle Partnership in other cities, we had to develop a new method because that was an enormous body of work that that group had done and for years and years and years, and wasn't something we could easily replicate in other cities. So with the help of some forestry consultants and some other folks involved, we've now evolved into using what we call the Forest Landscape Assessment Tool. It's available online. People can find it. And it's really a rapid assessment and to give us a snapshot of what's happening in the forest right now. And it's a rapid assessment, so it's something that we can do without a huge amount of time, but it really goes through all the forested parks in a given area, and we look at the forest composition, so the composition of the trees. So what types of trees are there? What is the age of the tree? So is it deciduous? Is it conifer? What are the species that are thriving and dominant in the overstory? And then we compare and contrast that with data that's collected about the understory. And really what we're looking at there is there a healthy, diverse, native shrub and ground cover plant community underneath the trees? But often what we're finding is a lot of invasive plants. And so it's not uncommon to find 90% or more cover of invasive plants in our urban forested parks. And that includes plants like Himalayan blackberry, English ivy. We're also finding lots of invasive trees such as holly, laurel, and other types of invasive maples that are different from our native bigleaf maple. And so we're comparing and contrasting those. And then we divide the forest into 9 different categories based on that threat of invasive plants and the forest canopy value. And Michael touched on some of the other elements that really make up a healthy forest. So in addition to that, when we're out on site, we're looking at, is it diverse? Is there a wide variety of species? You may have a really healthy understory of salal, but that's all there is. And so maybe there's time to go in and plant a few different other species. And then again, healthy soils and making sure that the whole complete forest ecosystem, both your big canopy trees, your midstory, and your understory, that's all part of a healthy ecosystem and healthy forest.
Would you highlight your 20-year strategic plan?
The 20-year strategic plan, of course, the original goals, and we're still keeping with it, pushing towards 2,500 acres by 2025. We will control or treat the invasive species, replant those areas, establish those areas until they're sustainable and healthy and can pretty much take care of themselves more or less without major interventions from us. So that's kind of the overarching thing. But also couched within the plan was a big emphasis on building strong community and advocates for the forest. And that has helped us to just maintain volunteer stewardship, citizen-based stewardship out in the woods, as well as help us pass like a Seattle Park District a few years ago, and then to maintain the public funding.
To what extent has climate change informed your efforts?
Yeah, this is a big topic. I think the Office of Sustainability and the Environment has been tracking climate change and carbon impacts around the city. And we know that transportation is one of our biggest climate impacts. And so as we've been talking about all our successes, we know that running a citywide restoration operation requires us to drive around the city and constantly make site visits, deliver tools and materials. And I think there's some ways that definitely we can do better, but there are some changes taking place. I mean, with the commitments of making the city carbon neutral in the near future, like I drove here in a hybrid this morning. The fleet, the city fleet of vehicles is getting transformed to more fuel-efficient vehicles, probably electric vehicles at some point in time, so there's that. But there's also some ways that we've set people up to carry out restorations in their parks. So a lot of our volunteer forest stewards, they may live really just next door to the park. So they just walk out their front door. We have a toolbox there, so there's no need to deliver tools constantly. So that saves us gas, and that just like is smart. We did that because it was just a time constraint thing, but really I think that's alleviating that transportation impact. But ultimately, all the good work that we're doing, climate informs the kind of vegetation that we plant out there. So we're planting longer-lived conifers and evergreen trees that absorb carbon. And really our Pacific Northwest forests can absorb a lot of carbon above ground and below ground as well. And we have actually several dozen plant species to choose from, and they are appropriate and adapted to the drought that, you know, we experience sometimes. I think there's some consensus that in the Puget Sound area and Pacific Northwest, what we're going to be experiencing is like really hot summers, and then basically we just get dumped on with rain, really torrential rain in the winter. Of course, we're still using all native vegetation to replant. And then two, with the rains especially, we've really upped our game as far as the requirements and our, you know, our specifications for erosion, is because we want to cultivate the environment out in the forest that it can absorb all the water that we can throw at it. But really, we don't want to be contributing to sediments that flow downstream into the rivers and Puget Sound.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Joanna Nelson DeFlores and Michael Yadrick of the Green Seattle Partnership, a nonprofit working to restore and actively maintain the city's forested parklands. Where are our healthiest forested areas in Seattle at present?
Well, there are really a lot of amazing forested parks, especially a lot that I'm sure many of the listeners here in Seattle have never visited before. And sometimes it's those little hidden gems that are really the special places, and places that we'd say are fairly intact and healthy. And some of it's due to decades of restoration, and some of them were already in pretty good shape. As Michael mentioned, we still have some old growth forests, Seward Park and Schmitz Park. Those are really great examples and good reference sites for what we're kind of shooting for our forest restoration. I wanted to mention a couple others that folks may not be as familiar with. So there's Landover Woods, which is right on the border, the far north border, right off 145th, barely in the city limits, just sort of up the hill from the water, and a really beautiful evergreen forest. If you stand there in the middle, you might feel like you're in the Cascades. There's also Dead Horse Canyon, which is on the far south end of the city. It's a small little remnant forest, but if you look at the plant diversity there, that you'll see maidenhair fern and all sorts of native flowers and things that you don't see as typically in some of these really, really dated and degraded forests that have not been maintained. There's also some great examples of 10, 15, 20 years down the road of years of forest restoration that's gone on. The West Duwamish Greenbelt is one of Seattle's longest contiguous forests. It's right up the hill in the shores of the Duwamish River over in West Seattle. And it's a long green belt with several different parks. And so there's some particular places like the Soundview property and Puget Park. And some of these areas have been worked on for many, many years. And what were sort of scary, really, really degraded woods maybe 20 years ago are starting to transform into these beautiful, healthy forests. So we're seeing that, you know, the restoration does work. Those are some of the few spots, and there's many, many more. But I encourage people to look up some parks that they haven't visited before. You know, there's also like Discovery Park and parts of some of the larger destination parks that are also really healthy forests.
Which forested areas are most in need of restoration at present?
The West Duwamish in particular, there's a lot of opportunity because it is the biggest chunk of forest that we have in the city. The East Duwamish as well. So there we have just room to operate, and we haven't got to a lot of areas. In some ways, they're fairly inaccessible as well. Also, you think of some of our bigger parks, too. There's lots of opportunities that we just haven't been at a pace to work through them. So Discovery Park, there's a lot of room still to work. Magnuson Park in particular, too. What we think is a kind of renewed interest and definitely a priority is to work in areas traditionally underserved. So some of these parks we just named, like Seward Park, has been a part of the park system for over 100 years. And places in the north end of the city as well have received a lot of love for decades. So there are some areas that Parks has recently acquired, you know, as late as the 90s, still opportunities to acquire and protect land in the city, believe it or not. Those opportunities are dwindling, but really you'll see through the end of the 20-year timeline for GSP, we'll be working more and more in parts of the city that haven't seen a lot of love. So you might be driving by them all the time. You just think there's some undeveloped, abandoned piece of property or whatnot, and it could be a park. It's pretty fascinating. There's like little urban ravines close to Rainier Beach. There's portions of forest up in the deep north. So really we want to equitably distribute the resources that we have because we want to work, yeah, like I said, in all parts of the city where we have the forested parkland.
Just very briefly, what are the key challenges to your restoration efforts?
Well, there's several, but I would say one of the challenges is actually as part of the success of the program, we have, you know, by the end of this year, expect to have 1,500 acres in restoration. They're all in different phases of restoration, and we never walk away from a restoration project. So we never say anything is restored. We say it's in restoration. So even 5, 6, 10 years out after a project's been started, it's going to always need some long-term maintenance, some long-term love and care. And so as we're starting to move some of these projects along, that timeline, nature's timeline, what it takes, it's a lot of patience and a lot of time to regrow a forest and to create a healthy forest. So because this is a community-based program and we're working with a lot of volunteers, the most excitement we get is out of clearing that acre of ivy, and automatically you see this big transformation. Or you go out with your friends and you work for 3 hours planting trees and shrubs, and that feels really good. It's really clear what you did that day. You can walk away saying, man, I planted 5 trees today, and those trees are going to grow up to be a legacy here. What we have a little bit of a challenge is how do we sell and get people enthusiastic about walking through an acre of land and they don't find any ivy. That's actually a huge success, right? But we need eyes and ears out there to do this maintenance work, or you're just doing a little bit here and a little bit there. And so as we're starting to, you know, mature into this program and realizing the long-term maintenance and getting volunteers excited about that, we do have over 160 what we call forest stewards. And those are trained, incredibly dedicated people that have adopted their parks. And that's the kind of work a lot of them want to be doing because they've seen the progress and they know how many hours went into a particular area. And for them, just like in your own backyard, when you finally feel like you got a handle on the weeds and it only takes you an hour versus the hundreds of hours you put in it before, that's really rewarding. So our forest stewards, they love to see those projects progress, but getting sort of the bulk of, you know, a group of high schoolers to understand the value of sort of wandering through the woods and looking for this one plant is a little less exciting. One of the other challenges is just the general awareness. This is a huge program. It's been said one of the largest forest restoration volunteer programs in the country. But we still aren't, you know, I mentioned the name. If I go out and meet somebody for the first time, they may not actually recognize the program. There's still a lot of awareness that needs to be created around the program and just a concept of what it means to volunteer. It's sort of a new culture, and I think a lot of young people are starting to adopt this, but it can be part of just what you do on a weekend. It doesn't have to be like set aside time to volunteer. You know, I ask people, do you have time to volunteer? Oh, no, I got too much going on. Do you have time to go for a hike? Yes. Do you have time to spend with your children? Yeah. So it can be an activity that you weave into your day if you're taking your kids out to the park anyways, why not take them out for an hour and a half, and teach them about what it's like to get your hands dirty? It doesn't always have to mean you're sacrificing your day. It can be part of your experience. So I think just getting more people aware about the values that these parks provide and ways that they can help. And then the funding, that's always going to be a challenge. We have the Parks District, which is really, really great and is allowing us to do a lot of the work that also volunteers can't do. So there's steep slopes. Sometimes the best practice for certain weeds is to use herbicide. And those are things that, volunteers definitely, we don't want them doing, or using equipment and machinery is going to be a lot more effective. So a large portion of the work gets done by professional crews. So we need to sustain that funding and also know that running a program of this size with this many volunteers takes money as well. And so keeping it a priority for leadership here in the city, I think the 20-year plan has really helped us stay the course and helped through several administrations keep this program highlighted and funded. So we want to keep that going.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
One of the reasons why I've stayed with this program for 12 years and why I get up in the morning and think to myself, yeah, this program is really making a huge difference. But I want all the listeners around Seattle to know that these forested parks serve us all. And there's so many places that have yet to be discovered. There's places or have been seen as scary woods, places you would never want to send your children or let them go run and explore, that are now transforming into beautiful neighborhood places of pride. And I really just love seeing that transformation in a relatively small amount of time. And so we talk about, you know, the ecosystem services, and we talk about the habitat value and all these great things that these trees provide us that we need to survive and live. But it's really a place where people are coming together as a community, which we need more and more these days as more people are coming to the city. These are little oases that are going to become more and more precious to us. Enjoy the fruits of the labor of many. Go out and enjoy these parks, get to know them, and join the effort if you can. There is a great opportunity if you're new to the Green Seattle Partnership or volunteering in parks coming up this fall. It is a fun one. We'll be kicking off planting season. So Green Seattle Day is coming up on November 4th. It's open to everyone. There's going to be 15 sites across the city. There's going to be a big hub and party and celebration up on Beacon Hill. That's where the main sites will be, but there'll be projects in every single neighborhood. So go to our website, and there's events every single weekend, if not most days, from taking a bike ride down Burke Hillman Trail and spending a few hours working with this amazing team of neighbors to parks all over across the city. So I just really encourage people to give it a try and get involved.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
You were just listening to Joanna Nelson DeFlores and Michael Yadrick of the Green Seattle Partnership. For more information, check on the web at greenseattle.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on KEXP.org.